Hi, everybody. You're listening to this month's episode of Phantom Limb. We'll be returning next month with more audio fiction, but November's episode is going to be a little behind-the-scenes discussion about the making of Season 2. I'm Alex Mayberry. I'm the lead writer and editor of Phantom Limb, and I'm here with my friend Matt Tracy, who is our my co-producer and, you know, lead sound design and composer guy.
That's right. That is my official title. So that's great.
Yeah, lead sound design and composer guy. It's on his business card.
And yeah. I work with Ben Patterson, and Ben Brown is our marketing director and is responsible for all of the graphics and images related to Phantom Limb. Mm-hmm. So we work collectively as a team to put this podcast together every month. And this month we're giving you a little bit of bonus content.
Later on, we'll have a discussion between you, Matt, and Ben Patterson about music and sound design from this season. But right now, we're going to sit down and just talk a little bit about the work that went into the making of Season 2, sort of from the writing and production end. Mm-hmm. We'll be choosing our favorite episodes and discussing our experiences making this thing. So if you are a huge Phantom Limb nerd, hang out and listen to us talk for a few minutes. And if you're just here for the audio fiction, feel free to skip ahead to next month when we return with the final episode of Season 2. That's fine, right? You can leave that.
No, that is perfect.
Yep. Good enough. Fucking good enough.
We got it.
Our whole production structure and everything was different this time around. We switched to a monthly episode format instead of what we did last time, which was, you know, we essentially made all of the episodes at once and then released them one by one every 2 weeks or so, right?
Yeah, it was a much tighter timeline like that. And the month by month thing ended up just becoming more of a routine. And it was easier, I think, to keep that going this season. You know, it wasn't like a full-on blitz like it was Season 1 when we were sort of figuring everything out.
We tried to set up a routine where we would get someone in the studio in the early part of each month and record an episode to release on the last day of each month. And for the most part, it worked out okay. We've got 9 out now.
Yeah.
You know, if you're listening to this discussion episode when it comes out, this is late November, and we have one episode planned for next month.
Let's talk about some episodes. I want to get into the good stuff.
Yeah. Let's talk about each episode one by one.
Okay.
Let's see. I almost want to start with One for the Pile, which is technically a Season 1 episode.
Oh, snap. You are right, man.
But it's how we tested
We called it bonus episode or something.
Yeah, something like
really.
That.
It's like...
Well, it's the way that we tested this idea of doing it as a monthly program, too. I called you, on October 2nd or 3rd or something like that? I was like, hey, man, if I get you a script in the next couple of days, do you think you can turn it into an episode by Halloween? and you did.
It turned out pretty good. That was a very I forgot about One More for the Pile. I'm glad you brought that up.
This is one of those episodes where the score that I had in my head when I was writing it and the score that you ended up, that you ended up creating were so very different. And I was so thrown the first time I listened to it. But, you know, as usual, you know, it's so funny working with you, Matt, because about 50% of the time, when I give you a music design or sound design suggestion in a script, you go with it and you execute it perfectly. And I'm just like, yeah, it's exactly what I was thinking. And about 50% of the time, you just go, no, we're going to do it this way. And it blows my mind every time. It's always the right choice. You know, when you follow your sound designer heart, you always make the right choices. And, you know, you decided to go with a real, I don't know, how do we describe the score for One for the Pile? Really minimalist, really atonal a lot of the time. A lot of noise and freaky distortions.
My mouth is dry. My lungs filled with stench.
That's the sound
and
of
smoke.
That's the sound of somebody skating on ice. You know how ice
makes that is?
Yeah,
that's amazing. It's great.
Sound is,
I have stopped wondering how many there are. What use are words like thousand or million to me now? I walk. And around me, above me, beneath me, the pile. That is all I need to know. That is all that I can comprehend.
You know, I think what I asked for there in the original script was some kind of orchestral, you know, yeah, I wanted low strings and ominous whatever. And you just, yeah, you just went in a completely different direction with it. But I was really pleased with the way it turned out.
The music, I don't know. It was hard for me to write music to that, you know, if that makes sense. Like when I'm reading it in the script or when I'm listening to you do the voiceover, it was just really hard for me to envision music. And instead I envisioned this like fucking, like one of those Halloween, like horror things that you like, you know, you walk through the woods and like shit jumps out at you and there's like creepy music playing. And, you know, there used to be a Halloween like cassette tape that my parents had that was just like scary shit for 60 minutes, you know, just like 60 minutes of just like scary shit. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I needed to go in that direction. And yeah, you didn't reject it, you know?
Because it was great.
You rolled with it.
Yeah, as always, I had a couple of little edits for you, but yeah, I think it turned out really well. So all of that to say, we went from nothing to a pretty polished, good episode in 30 days. And, you know, for me, that was kind of the proof of concept. And then we talked about it the next month, made our plans, solicited some writers, and launched into season 2 in January 2022.
And so that I might strike your arrogant head from your shoulders with mine own hand.
Wait, what?
So let's talk then about our proper season 2 episodes, starting with The Immortals. So yeah, what to say about The Immortals? This one, of course, stars the tremendous Dale Leopold. I believe I had to direct this one remotely, but it turned out fine. My favorite part of the episode by far is Dale's speeches. The way that you just wrote this perfect bespoke little orchestral accompaniment to go with his every word. It was like the music was hanging on his every word.
Well, and it was. It did make sense from a musical standpoint for like, every time he spoke, it was just music. And it's like every time Indiana Jones walks, you know, down, 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 down. He just needed to be scored the whole time.
But yesterday, for the first time in millennia, I felt the spreading warmth of the sacred amulet about my neck. And I knew that it was time. I reached out with my mind and felt my body dissolve into atoms, to be reforged in strength aboard mine vessel, cold and patient.
I just imagined old Vidar is a guy who'd had to watch humans fuck up the planet for way too long, and he'd had enough. So, you know, his little speech to them at the end, like I said, sort of, you know, I don't know that I'd advocate for the extermination of the human race as a solution to climate change, but, you know, there's an emotion there that I have in common with him, I guess. There's some anger, right, that comes up when you think about what we've done to the world. So yeah, that's The Immortals.
A great one to start with. It felt it felt good to get sort of completely overwhelmed again by Phantom Limb, because I had thought that it was going to be like, oh, now we've done a season, it's going to be so easy.
Yes.
And then I got hit with The Immortals on day one, and I was like, oh, fuck, like I have to write a 30-minute score.
I would say you did put in an inordinate amount of work on this episode in particular. I think, I don't know if you agree, but I think maybe some episodes were a little easier than this one in terms of just like sheer volume of work.
Yeah, just logistically. But hey, we got it done. And it was fun to make. And listening to Dale's voice the whole time, still just ringing in my ears.
So episode 2, Affordable Extractions.
I think we both know that you don't have anything else of value to offer, do you? Shame. Well, here we go.
Oof, okay.
Insert clip again. Yeah.
Yeah,
another revenge fantasy. Thoughts on Affordable Extractions, Matt?
I don't know. It's hard because there are some episodes in season 1, Cut to Make Whole, there's some gruesome things in Phantom Limb in general, but I think that Affordable Extractions is one of the more gruesome things because there's just no curtain or anything between you and the listener and what's going on in the chair. There's no fadeaways. There's no ambiguous, like, oh, you know what's happening, so now we're going to fade to black. No, it doesn't do that.
It's just a dude getting his teeth
yanked. Yeah, it's just a dude getting his teeth pulled out, and you have to just sit there and listen to it. So for me, it was very uncomfortable, but that usually means good Phantom Limb.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the tone of the Phantom Limb episodes varies wildly, right? We have all kinds of different episodes. But this one's definitely one of the more horrific ones. And I'm glad you feel that way, because I wanted it to be that way. I can provide two important pieces of context for the creation of this episode. It was inspired by, this is probably obvious from the episode, but it was inspired by online reviews of a real dentist practice, actually. I was shopping around, you know, for various reasons to fix various people's teeth, and like you do. And I came across this one place, I won't name it, but pretty much all of the comments, right, that get read in the episode are not word for word versions, but they're takes on real comments that I read of just, you know, dozens and dozens of people who felt that they had been poorly treated by this dentist. And my heart went out to these people. So this episode is about tapping into an anger that I think many of us feel towards the people who consistently exploit and oppress us, right? To be frank.
So like in every movie that we love, you know, there's this, you know, horrible conflict that was caused by some wrongdoing that was done to the hero. And then by the end of the movie, the hero comes back and he gets the villain in exactly the same way. And it's really poetic and poetic justice and all of that. There's a lot of that in this story, except it begins on the final scene of the movie, when the bad guy's finally getting his teeth pulled out because he punched other people in the teeth, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
and it's like, okay, end of movie. Yay. And then you can fade to black on him getting tortured. But instead it's like, oh, that's where our episode starts. you know,
begins with the comeuppance. Yeah.
It begins with the comeuppance. And then we have to watch the whole thing unfold.
And I tried to do a fun little subversion, right? I think hopefully at the beginning of the episode, your heart goes out to this guy who's getting his teeth pulled out, right, against his consent. And then hopefully by the end of the episode, we've subverted a little bit and you realize, aha, this guy, you know, I don't know if he deserves what's happening to him per se, but there's a reason anyway, right? He's not a victim. He's only having done to him a version of what he's done to others. Okay, so the other point of context I can share for the creation of this episode, the voice actors in this one are Dean Knight and me. And I think the fun point of context I'd like to share about that is that we had Dean use a dental block to record this episode. So we actually had Dean record his lines with his jaws spread apart. So he also put his body on the line for the craft.
Forgot about that. Oh my God.
Yeah. This, the creation of this episode involved putting shit in the mouths of two different people. So I hope the audience appreciates that. He was worn. I remember Dean was worn out by the end.
No, he was worked by the end of that session. Cause I remember there was even Dean is the most easygoing, the best performer. And he's just so awesome. But there was like, for the first time in my entire life, I saw tension between you and him because you were telling him, you know, he would say a line and you'd be like, no, 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 enunciated. And he would say, he just kind of was just like, guys, I can't, like, I have in my mouth. I can't do that.
There was a point towards the end where I kind of wanted to do, you know, do a couple more takes of things. But I, you know, we had to skip it because he was just getting tired. He struggled valiantly. He, you know, he spent how long was the recording session? Almost 2 hours, something like that.
It was a long one. Yeah.
And towards 2 hours, right. He had that dental block, right, stuck between his molars, right, the whole time. What a guy. So huge kudos to Dean.
But that was a very method episode. I think it turned out
pretty good. So he had the dental block in, right? When I was recording these lines, I had been fired from my job not even a full 24 hours before this. Wow. So I was pissed. Fired unjustly, I might add, right? From my perspective, in my own humble opinion. I was livid, right? I was red hot. I was ready to lean into this character who really enjoys his job of, I guess, essentially torturing bad dudes to teach lessons.
Yeah, right? Is that what we're calling it? Like, I mean,
more or less. Yeah. I mean,
it's like a self-appointed vigilante job, you know?
Yeah. Well, this character, you know, people might notice that he's not named. He's not given a name in the episode. I have a name for him, which I'll keep private, I think, because I kind of want to bring this character back. Hopefully in season two. I have an episode or two planned, but you never know. He's not named because he's more of an avatar of right revenge or something, right? His name is not important. He is his job, which is, you know, to take vengeance on the oppressor.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I had just been fired and, I was red hot. So, if it sounds like I'm enjoying what I'm doing in this episode, I am.
It made it easy.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was a great way to blow off some steam.
What's episode 3? Let's move on to that one.
Oh yeah, episode 3. Let's talk about episode 3, which is Harrison Polytropos.
Oh my god. Yes. Okay, we can talk about that.
I know you have a lot to say about Harrison
Polytropos. Oh yeah, dude. Yeah.
This is the episode that I was pretty much least involved in.
You know.
So this one is, this one is 95% you and Ben Patterson.
Can I just talk about like the process that
we used?
It was so, weird.
Tell our listeners about how this episode was made.
Okay. Yeah. I'll just talk about the logistics and then I'll turn it over to you to talk about, you know, I guess what your take on it is, but because it's hard to say that there's like a story, but so basically what happened was, when I texted Ben and I just said, I need to do something with sound design, and can I send you like 3 minutes of a scene that I create using no dialogue and just sound design? And Ben said, well, sure, you can send me whatever you want. He said, but like, who cares? Why, you know, why'd you text me? And I said, well, because maybe you can send me a 3 minutes after that. And he said, and so the initial plan was just to send each other 3 minutes a piece of, you know, or two minutes or whatever, of this story. And we were going to try to put it together. But as the couple of weeks went by, we started texting each other more. And we were like, what if we did a round robin? Like, remember those round robin stories when you may have a campfire and you're camping and you like somebody tells the story and they say, and then Alex walked up to the door and he opened it and inside was... And then you turn it over to the person sitting next to you and they continue the story and they become the focal point. And then it happens again. And so we got into this concept saying, all right, let's send it back and forth between each other like a bunch of times and do a round robin situation. And we never scripted it.
Mm-hmm.
It only has ever existed in audio form, but it's kind of a story that we put together, and we basically created this long sequence of sound design and had the amazing Taylor Dawson come into the studio, and we put 3 microphones on Taylor, left, center, and right. And she just basically reacted to the whole sound design.
Yeah. And which we'd never done before.
It was just, and so that's all I have to say, but it was just a really unique thing to do, and it was never planned in any way. It just sort of organically just like emerged out of nothing.
It's just sort of this improvised antiphonal sort of creation process that you and Ben came up with. I really liked it, and the recording session was different from any other Phantom Limb that we've made, because, you know, ordinarily we record all the dialogue first and you guys build the sound design around it. This time you guys had a 95% complete episode, right? The sound design didn't change much after that. And you had recorded you know, you had recorded some, I guess, not dialogue, since Harrison does not speak throughout the episode, but some, you know, some reactions, some breathing, some right, that kind of stuff.
There were a couple things. There was there's a speech at the very beginning from somebody on a like a video call or something.
Sure, sure, right. But you know, the protagonist, right?
Yeah, protagonist never speaks. Yeah. Lieutenant Commander.
That's right. Lieutenant Commander. What's your name? Lieutenant Commander Jacqueline Harrison.
Jacqueline Harrison. Yeah.
That's right. Man. Yeah.
I remember at one point talking to Ben Patterson, and we had only recorded my voice and his voice as the reactions to what was happening in the scene that we had created.
Sure.
And we started talking about it, and we said, you know, gosh, this would be so much better with a female hero. And you know, we were like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then we named her Jackie Harrison, and we were like, all right, we got something here, you know, this is good. And then we just started talking about what it would be like if Taylor did it, and not having ever like asked her, are you willing to do this?
Right. And we had worked with her before, right, in season one.
Yeah, we worked with her a bunch,
among other things.
And I worked on a film with her a few years ago. Taylor and I have known each other for a little while, and she's been, you know, working with us for years at this point. But it was just like, I don't know. We just sort of talked about it. We were like, yeah, what would it be like if Taylor Dawson did that? And I'm so glad it worked out, because we always envisioned her doing it. And when she said yes, and it was just like, okay, it's the pieces are going to fall into place. So it was such an organic thing.
All of that to say, she was, you know, we had her in headphones in the booth, and she was listening to, you know, the ship blow up around her, and her fight with drones, and flight from the predators in the forest.
I can still picture what it like. I had this view sitting at the computer, and then Ben would switch off with me at different times so that we could both take part. But, you know, you could see her through the glass doors in the studio, mm-hmm. and she was not just standing there. Like, she was like fucking all over the place. Like,
oh, yeah. she was moving,
crazy.
You know, yeah, yeah.
She was like, she was going back and forth and like screaming and like running from one side of the room to the other, and, uh-huh. and all with headphones on. It was just like, what is happening? But
definitely the most acrobatic voice acting session I've seen.
Oh my god, it was incredible. Let me just play the very beginning here, because I have a nostalgic attachment to the very beginning of this episode here.
Sure, yeah, let's hear.
The first thing I ever created.
Emergency breakthrough communication.
Run, Jackie! There won't be a treaty. They killed your sister and everyone else. Get out of the sector. Deliver the package at all costs and meet us at the rendezvous.
So, there
you
go.
Much fun. So. Definitely a great hook. Definitely a great episode hook. And then, the spaceship starts blowing up around her, and she's, you know, and it's kind of nonstop action.
It's just, oh, my God. It's nonstop action. Yeah, it's so good.
So much. This poor woman goes through so much. To episode 4, which is Birthday Girl.
Oh man, okay. Yes. Return Birthday of Girl. Reverend Cheryl Fair in this one. Uh-huh.
Yep. Insert clip from Birthday Girl here.
You're already at the maximum dosage, but you need more.
No. Mommy, please. Please don't.
Hold out your arm.
No, mommy.
This was our first episode that was contributed by a new writer for this season. This script was by my friend Will, who I have a sci-fi book club with. cool. And I knew he was a writer, so I when I was asking around, he was willing to contribute an episode. And yeah, I really enjoyed this one. So this is written by Will. This is voice acted by Cheryl Fair, the Reverend Cheryl Fair, as you said, who was a writer for us last year and contributed voice acting as well. And then my daughter, Ariadne Mayberry, in her Phantom Limb debut. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. What a duo.
Oh, they were so great together, weren't they? Oh, man. Yeah, I thought fantastic cast of voice actors for this one. I enjoy Will's script a lot. Obviously, I'm biased, but I think my daughter is very talented as an actress, and it was a lot of fun. I never really actually, this is the first time she's worked on one of my projects, and it was a lot of fun. She did great.
She was very natural. She's, how old is she when she did this?
She is, let's see, she's 11 now.
Was she 10 when she did it, or was she 11 already?
It was right around her birthday. I think we recorded this like the weekend of her 11th birthday, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think you did, yeah.
Yeah, within a week or two of it, anyway.
You guys are going to get ice cream, I think, or something to celebrate, yeah.
Yeah, so she's 11, right? Playing a 30-something, right? Hormonally forced to being a 5-year-old for her whole life.
And it was super creepy, and I got to record a creepy minor key version of Happy Birthday, which that made me a lot very happy.
Yeah, and in general, a pretty simple episode when it comes to sound design. This one was probably for you kind of a nice break after Harrison Polytropos.
Not as complex.
Nearly as complex.
It was interesting though. I mean, you know, the whole structure of the episode was interesting because you had multiple rooms in this house or apartment or wherever she was keeping the girl, and she moves around a lot. There were a lot of set changes. You know, if this were a piece of live theater, there would be a lot of set changes. It's like she's in her room, she's out in the big room with mommy, and then she goes to the secret cupboard that she's not supposed to go into.
Right.
You know, and she creeps down the hallway, and she's, you know, she goes to the elevator, and there's all of these different like places, and they all had to sound different. So it was a fun challenge.
And the structure of the episode, from a writing perspective, I thought was also just nice and simple, kind of classic. It has what I would think of as kind of a classic golden age sci-fi twist at the end. Fun little dark twist. That's Birthday Girl.
Cheryl portrayed this. It was like Annie from Misery. Remember that thing about putting the hairs on the door handle of things so that when you open it, you break the hair. She knows, you know. It was like
mommy knows everything.
Constant surveillance, man. It was just creepy.
Yeah.
And Cheryl, being our sweet sort of low key friend, she tends to portray these villains quite well. You know, she can turn on that sort of villainy, you know, when needs be. So I really enjoyed her performance in this.
You know, I haven't asked Will if this is true or not, but I suspect that this episode is written a little bit in conversation with a previous episode from the an episode we talked about previously, which is One More for the Pile, you know, which has One for the Pile, sort of, how to put it, One for the Pile, sorry, blah, 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 let me start over. One More for the Pile has a child in it who is underprotected and perishes as a result, right? So this is, this episode contains a child who is very much overprotected from a plague that may or may not exist, right? So I don't know, I never have asked him, but I think it might've been written in conversation with that, sort of to look at the other side of that coin. I don't know, we'll have to see.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Okay, so on to the next episode, which is another one of mine, episode 5, and the Cruel Black Void.
Yikes.
I read it and it was a masterpiece, but it's also like impossible to make. You know what I mean? And so there was this I was very daunted, you know, feeling like, this is basically a Star Trek The Next Generation episode. And I have to take the lead on making this TNG episode, you know, and it's just like, holy shit, you know. But fortunately, I had a lot of help on this episode from both you and Ben Brown and Ben Patterson. Everybody chimed in and really helped me along the way, because I did feel like I got stuck a little bit. It ultimately turned out quite well, and I thought that another amazing performance from Taylor.
Oh yeah, another fantastic performance from Taylor. She originally this the part of the annoying robot companion was supposed to be Ben Brown, but he was not able to make it sort of at the last minute, so I had to step in and do it. And I think it turned out okay. And if, you know, if the last one, Birthday Girl, was simple in terms of sound design, this one is definitely a lot more complex. Originally, I had slotted in a full 2 months for you to work on this one, but, you know, because of various scheduling difficulties, just logistical stuff caused by the, you know, the monthly schedule that we subjected ourselves to, you only ended up with 3 weeks or something to put this together.
It was fun. It wasn't like a bad experience or anything, because it was this amazing challenge to make it all work together. And just the way that it's written, you know, I can really connect with the script. You know, I read the script many times because it was almost, you had to like get what was going on, and, you know, in fully, because I had to listen to, okay, the outside of the spaceship, inside of the spaceship at this point.
You have the weird, well, I guess if you're listening to this, you've probably heard the episode, so it's not a spoiler to mention the time loop sort of in the latter half of the episode.
Yeah.
I thought you handled it brilliantly. This one probably went through more editing than any other episode just to get all those little pieces right.
Yeah, I think this one and the beep are probably in terms of
season one.
Yeah, in terms of just like the number of pieces that it took to make that puzzle, it was those two.
And, you know, like most of the episodes I write, just because of the way we do things, this one was written for Taylor, right? Written with her in mind.
Correct, yes.
So, you know, tailored for Taylor, if you will. and she, you know, knocked it out of the park, as always. I really wish Ben Brown could have been there to do, the MC character. I'm sure he would have killed it as well. But, he was not able to make it that day, so I had to fill in.
And there were a lot of really good moments in the studio. I remember doing that episode because there's a lot of audio footage that you can, you know, samples that you can listen to that's basically just Taylor choking or like coughing up blood or like, you know, like whatever's happening in the episode. And it's just that I have these like, you know, minute long audio files. That it's just Taylor just dying, you know.
she
really goes for it, you know.
She really goes for it.
Oh
yeah.
Man, it's so
and
good.
I really, you know, this is not the only episode of Phantom Limb this season that ends with someone choking to death, but she killed it. I wanted to make the end as uncomfortable as possible.
Success.
I think it turned out. I think it turned out really well. One of our more ambitious ones in terms of sound design for this season. But, you know, I would say that, you know, we've been making Phantom Limb for 2 or 3 years now total. It'll be 3 years coming up pretty soon since we've been working on this project. And, you know, at this point, we have a nice, comfortable working relationship. And I know that I can rely on you and Ben to just do incredible things. I really wanted to push it with this episode, and you knocked it out of the park as always.
Thanks. And you know, it doesn't happen without a script, and doesn't happen without the, you know, the artwork and the you know, everything that it takes to put together an episode. I mean, you know, it's a team effort for sure.
Thanks for listening to Phantom Limb. We release new episodes on the last day of every month. If you like what you hear, please leave us a rating or review, and consider supporting us at buymeacoffee.com/phantomlimb. For just $5, you get access to bonus content like author interviews, soundtracks, behind-the-scenes photos, and more. And you help us pay the fine folks who donate their time and talent to this project. Thanks again for listening, and don't forget to join us next month.